Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Today, I have an author with us with a very diverse and interesting background. She is Delia Colvin. Delia is the international best-selling and award-winning author of The Oracles and will be releasing book 5 of The Oracles next year. Delia's newest novel, The Haunted Heart of Rory O'Dannon, was selected by Beck Valley Book Reviewer's Best Book of 2015. And Beck Valley is one of the top review companies in the English-speaking world. With over 150,000 books in distribution, Delia burst onto the scene releasing 3 novels in 15 months. Delia had always considered herself a storyteller from a very young age, but didn't find her voice until after a near-death realization that she hadn't done what she intended to do in this life. And not long after that, she began writing. And although she didn't believe she was capable of actually completing a novel, she wrote 3 in 10 weeks. Delia is also a screenwriter, has worked in the air traffic control business, volunteers to train pilots on aviation weather, was a Russian interpreter, and actually worked some fairly tense Cold War situations. So this is one very interesting and diverse woman, and my interest is definitely piqued to find out more. So welcome to the show, Delia.
Hi, Pat. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I don't know where to start. So many different experiences in your life. But maybe let's begin with your pre-writing days. You said you had a near-death experience that led you to find your voice. Share that journey with us.
Yeah, you know, I think I was one of those rare people that kind of came out of the womb and knew I was supposed to be, you know, writing, and I used to put on plays and everything, and I kind of stopped that. And I had in my head, I think, that you know, I had to be retired. I had to have a lot of money before I could really pursue my dream of writing. And then one day it changed, because I had, if you have one blood clot in your lung, you can die from that. I actually had so many blood clots I couldn't count them. And it was just this moment of truth. I was sitting there and I suddenly couldn't breathe, and I felt like I was having a heart attack or something was happening. And I got up and I rushed into the bathroom. I don't know why. And I was in there, and suddenly I realized I hadn't written my stories. Nobody had read my stories. And then I looked over and I realized that, you know, my family was not going to do well with this. And then I realized I was in the bathroom and that I didn't want to do an Elvis. So I rushed out of the bathroom. And you know, that was really a life changer for me, because I realized that I had to be doing what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't something that I could wait for. So I started, and actually it took another 6 months before I actually got that kick in the tail and actually started writing. So.
Isn't that crazy that we need something so dramatic or traumatic to happen to kind of jolt us to say, wait, we don't have all the time in the world here. Let's get going.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Well, thank goodness that happened. And obviously then everything cleared up for you.
It did. As a matter of fact, it was really interesting, because, you know, I suddenly felt like I was on purpose. And, you know, they say blood clots are supposed to take, like, I think 8 weeks before they dissolve. Mm-hmm. And 8 days later, they did a check on my lungs and they were completely gone. And I think that's just part of the power of being on purpose with what you're doing, you know?
I love that message. I hope folks take heed. That is pretty profound, actually. Wow, thank you for sharing that. We can end the interview now, right?
That's right.
That's enough for one day. Oh my gosh. So then you decided to write your story. So then how did you come to write in the genre that you find yourself writing today?
You know, it's really interesting. I've done several changes. I've always been intrigued with stories that had a story of eternal love and something that, you know, could withstand the test of time. And I've always had kind of a interest in magical or mystical stuff. And so I did really plan this. I was driving into D.C. one day, and suddenly Alex Morgan's story was there. As a matter of fact, the first scene that I saw in my head is the one that's the first scene in the book, still.
Mm-hmm.
And I started, I was actually, at that time, I was pursuing another purpose line and was on study for like 15 hours a day and driving into D.C. So I started writing on my iPhone in between breaks, and I was kind of stunned because it was Greek mythology, and I'd never had an interest in Greek mythology.
Oh.
And people say, oh, you must have studied Greek mythology. No, I had no interest in it. It was just that was his story, and I've always kind of had this feeling like somebody or something comes to me and gives me their story, and it's kind of this gift.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to tell, to honor whatever they, whatever story they gave me. So that was kind of where that one came from.
Interesting. So that actually might answer my, help to answer my next question, is that you seem to be very prolific. And so why is it that you can write so much in a short period of time? But if you're getting this muse, so to speak, coming to you, then it's probably something that you just have to go with.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I've also kind of realized, and I think with the Oracle series, one of the things that happened, because I was able to complete it in a very short period of time, I mean, I started writing, and in 10 weeks, it was very clear I had three novels, not one. I suddenly gained the confidence, and I think over that next year when we went through, you know, the first book we released a little bit early, probably a little premature, and I was not quite sure. You know, I'd seen a lot of editing happen where people changed the intent of the story, and so I was very rigid on what I would allow to happen. On the second book, you know, you start learning to trust the people that you're around, and so on the second book, I think, is a much better book, and then the third book got spectacular reviews, and it's actually one of my favorites. And the fourth one, same thing. So I think you just kind of learn to trust yourself in that, and in this, it was in Greek mythology. The next one had to do with Irish history, with Rory O'Dannon, and actually in my screenwriting, I just found a new passion, and that's writing thrillers, so kind of, you know. But yes, I do feel like, especially with the Oracle series, like there was a muse that was coming and, you know, giving me their story, and certainly with the Rory O'Dannon, I felt the same way with that one. In my screenwriting, it's a little different. I kind of find a story, and you know, I have an amazing mentor with over at Screenwriting U, Hal Crosman, and he's really helped me find my voice in that. So,
ooh, how exciting, huh?
It is exciting.
Yes, it is. Well, let's talk a bit about your Oracle series. There are four books currently, and you're in the process of finishing the fifth.
Right.
Okay, well, tell us a bit about them. Maybe give us a little synopsis.
Sure. In the first book, The Sibling Oracle, Sibling Oracle is what they called, back in Greek mythology, the person, a sibyl, and somebody that could see the future, and it's also the prophecies that they wrote down. And in this case, it actually is indicating the main character, who was Cassandra of Troy. And in my story, Apollo had given them all these oracles the power to see the future so that they could protect what happened with people because they knew that they were leaving. And Cassandra of Troy was the most powerful of the oracles, and so some of the bad guys figured out there was ways to take care of the oracles, as in poisoning them or, you know, knocking them off. There were certain ways that they could kill them. And Cassandra of Troy reincarnates. She doesn't remember who she is, and her long-lost love, her Cymbelin soulmate, Alexander Morgan, is going through history with his visions, trying to find her and save her. And so in the first book, he's actually found her, and it's his opportunity for the first time in all the years to actually save her. And so that's book one. And you meet the group of oracles, and it's a small group, and they're kind of fun and funny. And then in book two, they are scheduled to get married. They go to the group of oracles or immortals to get permission, and there is somebody that has counterintention on them getting married, and it's somebody that was once in love with the character of Cassandra. And so he sets it up so that she can never see him again, otherwise he will be executed. And so they spend all that book trying to figure out how to solve that. And then in book three, they actually get a chance to get married. And as they're going through that, there's even more challenges. And all along, the question is she immortal now? And book three answers that question. And then in book four, you think they've got their happily ever after, and they actually find out that they have to go back in time. There's an area where they can, some of the oracles start disappearing, and somebody that was once dead and an enemy is now alive. And so they travel through a thing called the Mists of Time and start figuring out how to put the pieces together. That's the kind of an interesting book because it's actually intended to be book five kind of answers a lot of the questions that are happening in book four.
Okay, so book five is going to wrap up this series, or might there be a book six?
I think it's probably going to wrap up this series, yeah. I intended there was only going to be three. Book three was kind of like more like two books, and then book four was the same thing, so yeah.
All right. So you've won quite a bit of awards for these first four books. Let's share the excitement of that.
Yeah, you know, it was really kind of interesting. I when I released the first book, I actually didn't know how it was going to be received. And about, I think it was, let's see, the following December, I was really surprised because on Goodreads it was voted number one best book for that month, for the month of release, which I think was, it was actually released in July, but for some reason they had it in June, and so it qualified that. And there were books that were, you know, New York Times bestsellers that were actually in the same category, and some of them being number two or three in my category. So it was pretty exciting to see that happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're kind of living the dream when that happens, when people like your stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Sally Field sometimes, you know, you like me, you really like me. I really understand that.
Exactly. Well, being an author, it's so solitary, so it's nice to get validation.
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very funny because I was kind of pressured to release The Oracles, the first book, before I was really ready to do it. And I was, my daughter sees me as like this incredibly courageous person that's out, you know, tearing up the world and doing what I intended. And yet when I released that first book, it was absolutely the most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life. And I sat back in my bedroom. I was already starting to work on book number two, and I had my bottle of wine, bottle, not a glass. And I was so tense and upset, and I was sitting there working on my computer, and there was this one woman who evidently, I think I went to high school with her, but I didn't really know her, and she had somehow found out I was writing a book, so she had said that she'd like to read it, and she's not very verbal. And so before I tried to talk to her, she hadn't really sent me anything. So she sends me this note the day after I'd released it, and it says that she really loved the book, and when is book two coming out? And she asked me like five different questions, and I sent her back a thing, and I started answering each question individually. And she said, "I said I want to know when book two is coming out."
Oh.
And then I got a phone call right after that from somebody. And then it was about a week later. I was still quite nervous about it. I went for a walk in my apartment complex. And I was walking my dogs. And I came around a corner. And this woman is there. And she said, "Are you Delia Colvin?" I said, yeah, I'm Delia Colvin." And she goes, "I thought so." And I said,
"Whoa,
what's going on?" And she goes, "Well, me and the ladies down at the FBI, we've been reading your book every day." And she said, "I heard that you lived in this area, and somebody told me that you lived in and that you walked your dogs here every day."
Oh, my gosh.
"I've been waiting to get your autograph."
Oh, your first stalker, right?
It was my first stalker.
I love it. But again, it gave you that feeling of, yes, you know, somebody read it, people like it, and it gives you the impetus to get going and finish that book too.
It was amazing, yeah, and it really did. And it really, I think those contacts are really what made me feel like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. So.
Oh, excellent. Good positive stories. Yes. So now, plotster or pantster, do you... outlined, or do you just fly by the seat of your pants?
You know, I usually know where I'm going in the story, but I don't always know quite how I'm getting there. So if I'm writing a novel, I tend to just kind of let it go. When I'm screenwriting, I outline down to the smallest detail. Mm-hmm. I've been trained to do that, though, so because I think screenwriting is such a different, you know,
well, it's
writing
more,
media.
It's more visual, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then what about your characters? So many folks tell me that they start off with the character in mind, and then this person takes off like a bad kid and kind of goes their own direction.
That's so interesting. You know, my main characters in my novels never—they just don't change. They are just who they are, but the other characters, the supporting characters, those completely will change. They'll do things that completely surprise me. The villains, especially, I love the villains. The villains are so much fun. They always surprise me because I found that I end up really having a lot of empathy for them, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Everybody else gets so upset with them, and I always go, oh, no.
Oh, he's the underdog.
Horror. Misunderstood, you know.
You're too kind. Oh, my. So some of them are in control, and some of them get out of control.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, now, what about your cover art? How did you decide on that? What's that process?
You know, I stumbled across, I really love symbols. We had, originally on the covers, we had all symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in and found symbols from Greek mythology. And actually, most of them looked like they were Celtic, but they actually date back to Greek mythology. And so originally, that's what we had on the covers. And then we found out it was right in the age where, you know, 50 Shades and
right.
All of a sudden the covers of romance books changed and you had to have people.
Mm-hmm.
And now you just have to have a male from the, you know, neck down. But
exactly, right.
But I don't like that. So
no.
So we had, let's see, I have this brilliant, brilliant cover designer, Natasha Brown, and she's out of Colorado, and she just does the most amazing work. On cover, let's see, 4, Mists of Time, that's my favorite cover, mm-hmm. And that one we had shot. We have some filmmakers that are just amazing. Bazilla is brilliant, and so he designed my cover. We had some actors and actresses that came in, and I had a vision for it where they're skinny dipping.
Mm-hmm.
And the pictures just ended up just amazing between Tasha and Fazio. So
a lot of people maybe don't give that much thought to the cover, but you do judge a book by its cover, and there's probably just as much work went into the cover as it did into the book.
Oh, it did. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of design. It's mm-hmm. a lot of work, and what you have to do is you really have to be able to take that picture down to a to the same size as they've got on Amazon, because all they're looking at is a stamp, a thumbnail
yes.
of that picture. And
yes.
if you can't see what it is, if it doesn't draw your attention,
nope, that is a challenge.
That's not it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, a lot of work. Well, it pays off, though.
Yes, it does.
It does. Well, now tell us about The Haunted Heart of Rory O'Dannon, because that's your first book that's not associated with Greek mythology.
It is, and interestingly enough, that one started off, it actually happened from an incident that happened to me when I was 21. I was living in a house that was supposed to have been haunted, and I didn't really know what I thought about that, but I was going through kind of a rough time, and in the middle of the rough time, I developed a strep throat and had a temperature of 105, and I was laying in my bed one day, and I heard what everybody said was the ghost, and I said, okay, if you're the ghost, you know, go ahead, come on in, and the next thing I knew, I felt myself moving through space into this other realm. Now, remember, I did have a temperature of 105.
Okay, yes.
And the next thing that I knew, I knew some time had passed, and I was in my bed, and this absolutely breathtaking man was looking, holding me in his arms and looking down into my eyes, and he kissed me, and it was the most extraordinary kiss. And then he set my head down on the pillow, and all this, and I closed my eyes, and the next thing I knew is I thought, oh, wait a second, I'm alone in this house. What the heck just happened here? And I opened my eyes, and no one was there. And so all of my life, I've wondered, who was that and what happened?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to write a screenplay, and I wrote a screenplay, and it I really decided that it was not something that I was going to market right now, but I did decide that it was probably going to be a novel. So we wrote the Haunted Heart of Rory O'Dannon. I had Beck Valley Books, who is one of the top book reviewing companies, said, you know what, we've got a space reserved for you for Christmas time if you've got a book. And I said, you know what, I will have a book. And so I sat down, and in less than a month, I think it was in about 3 weeks, I wrote the
Get out.
Wrote the novel, got it edited, and got it out. And I was really stunned with the reviews on it because it was done so quickly. And it was actually the first book I've ever done that I didn't read through at least a dozen times. I don't think I read through it completely once. I still haven't.
Whoa. People listening, authors listening to this are not going to believe that.
I know. It's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. And in my story, actually, with this one, I had a reader who I just absolutely love, and she had written me a book after I finished book three of The Oracles and said, will you please write me a story that takes place either in Ireland or Scotland and has some time travel, you know, in it? Could you do that? And so this was for her. She's got MS, and she's kind of battling through it, and so we added that element to it.
Oh, that makes it doubly important.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you're so awesome. And you've been talking about screenplays, and you're currently working on a screenplay based on a New York Times bestseller that you say that's in negotiations with a very major producer in a television series that has some serious interest. Can you share?
Yeah, I can share a little bit about it. we've got, there is a gentleman that won the Oscar just a couple years ago, and he's been talking to me about a screenplay from this New York Times bestseller. And it's a story about the civil rights movement and a young woman who falls in love with a black man. And it really has a piece of my heart. That story, I wrote to the author as soon as I read it, and I said, you know, I've never written a screenplay, but this one I want to write, and I know I could write it if you just give me the chance. And to my absolute astonishment, she gave me the rights. And so we've had several major actors. We've had A-list actors read the screenplay and that are interested interested in attaching to it. And so we've got some really cool things going on with that. And then this, then we've got a thriller series that's based on air traffic control and a secret organization that's kind of causing trouble in the world, which... So we've got those two things, and then I've got another thriller that's called Radar Contact that's also getting some interest. So.
Well, with your diverse background, you can pull from all kind of experiences, I would imagine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is interesting because especially everybody kept saying, write about air traffic control, and I kept thinking, I don't know that I want to really do that. And as soon as I got this character, I went, I could write her story.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of... She's tough. She's arrogant. She can't be wrong about anything. And I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting character to write from because all of my heroines are a little, they're not completely fragile, but they are a little fragile. Mm-hmm. And this one is not.
Wow, you're so exciting. So much going on. You're going to have to keep us posted on the screenplay so that we can tell everyone we knew you when.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping so.
Oh, my. So with all of this work going on, what do you do, with all this writing work going on, what do you do to promote your work, and do you have any advice for fellow authors as far as getting your work out there?
Yeah, I do. You know, one of the things that I had to really go through a learning process. But as far as marketing, I found Melissa Foster has the Fostering Success, and she has a little program for to teach authors how to market their stuff. And that is the thing that I did to learn how to market my stuff. Now, I will tell you that when I went onto the bestsellers list, I think the Cymbelin was one of the most highly downloaded romance books and paranormal over Christmas of, I think that was 2012. And the way that it got there is, you know, you don't typically want to compete with the big boys because that's when they're spending their budgets. But I took a risk, and I actually was regretting it, and suddenly it just took off, and that was what happened. Was a mistake that went very right. So I kind of learned how to do that. I like Facebook marketing, but there's a couple of places that I found really give you a good bang for the buck and a lot of them that don't. And you have to find those places where you're getting those. We have when you have a good authors group, you can kind of compare notes. And so I go on to Fostering Success, and we have a website there, Melissa does, and then we compare notes, what's working for us now, what's not working. Mm-hmm. And I use that quite a bit.
In order to grow as a writer in your craft and in order to learn these tips from others and not make the mistakes that others made along the way, I think it helps to join these different writers groups and forums and become part of a community.
Yeah, I completely agree. The one thing that I get, I didn't like a lot of the authors groups because there was a lot of don't do this and be careful and I go the complete opposite direction. I let everybody read my scripts. I let everybody, you know, I do table mm-hmm. reads. I get, you know, when I have books, I send them out to everybody, and that's just how I do that.
Well, now, what's next for Delia Colvin?
I've got, we're finishing up as soon as we get these deals going on the screenwriting. I'm excited to do that. I kind of like to, I think I'm going to do more screenplays and probably some more television. And really, I'm excited about writing book 5 on the Oracle series. I think that'll be a blast to do.
Yay. All right. We can look forward to that. Well, now, Delia, is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
You know, I think the only thing that I wanted to talk about is just when you're talking to authors or people that want to write books. I have a lot of authors that come to me that say, I want to write. And the thing is that you have to finish your book. You have to push through it because that process of pushing through and completing that thing starts you on a path. And so you finish the book and then you start working through it and you find, for instance, I have now 3 editors that I work with. Usually it goes through 3 different editors. Then I do a read aloud, and then I have my beta readers that read it. And in the end, I always trust if I have a strong feeling about a direction that I want to go, I keep it in that. But I have my beta readers that I very, very much trust. Mm-hmm. And you have to have these people, these editors that you know that they've got a point. I don't always change exactly what they say, but I may change the lead-in to what happens so that maybe it's a little clearer. Mm-hmm. And I think telling your story, but making sure that you do have everything handled. You know, every time I get a comment about something, I always go, oh, yeah, that was something I kind of knew was not quite right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think the tendency is to be hurried about it. It's like you've spent all this time writing it, and it's like, let's get it out there.
Right.
But that could be a huge mistake on the back end.
It is a huge mistake. And I really wish that I got pressured to release the Oracles. I would have liked to have gone through it several more times, you know, and if I could, you know, you always have your first book. If I could go back and completely rewrite it, at book 1 now, I probably would. I'm pretty pleased with book 2 and on. And book 1 I'm happy enough with, but I probably would have written it a little different now.
Sure, sure. And I guess a lot of people would say that, especially with the first book. It's your first foray into writing and publishing, so I think that could be expected.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. And every major author has said that, so that's kind of
yes.
fun.
Don't kick yourself. Well, where can we find out more about you, and where can folks purchase your books?
I've got a website. It's DeliaColvin.com. And my books are all on Amazon. I've also got an author page on Amazon. But right now, I think you can get them on almost all of the major sites, Barnes & Nobles and all that, Kobo.
All right. Well, folks, head over to DeliaColvin.com for starters. DeliaColvin. DeliaColvin.com. I have to say, I was looking forward to this conversation today because you are just an exciting and fascinating woman and author. And thank you for sharing you and your books and your point of view with us today.
Thank you so much, Pat. I had so much fun.